kind of cool right now.
Welcome to MassMEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there's some element to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding inefficiencies, strengthening internal processes, or unlocking growth, that can extend the firm beyond its current limitations.
Thank you all for joining us today. I'd like to introduce our first-time co-host, second visit on the podcast, the MassMEP Center Director, Kathy Mahoney. Thank you,
Thanks,
Kathy.
Thanks for having me, Haley. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad to have you taking a big jump in the pay grade today over to the co-host side. I like it.
Yeah, awesome. Watch out. I'll have your job soon.
Hey, I know. I thought I had job security there for a little while. But now I'm getting a little nervous. And our guests. So we have two. This is going to be a really awesome podcast for us today. Our two guests with us today. We'll do ladies first. Representative Hannah Kane, 11th Worcester. Right, Hannah?
Yep, that's right. Shrewsbury and Westboro.
Nice. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. And we have Representative. I'll go with Dan Donahue, and he's with 16th in Worcester.
I am, yes, the southeastern part of the city of Worcester.
Awesome. So thank you both for taking time out of your very busy day. I just said I'm sure you guys are super busy. Obviously, we've tried to schedule with you guys and get you in here because we think this is really important. It's a big topic for us that we want to get through. So welcome. Welcome. I'm going to ask you guys a question. Like I said, we always start off with something to kind of ease into things. I'm going to go with Dan and Hannah on this one. So obviously the pandemic isn't something that anybody would have predicted. And I'm pretty sure maybe the two of you have always had a vision of getting into politics and being, you know, a representative obviously is where you are today, which is awesome. But is there something that you've learned about yourself in a political light that is the absolute polar opposite of your views that you just never would have expected because of this pandemic?
That's a good question.
Deep question.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see how lighthearted.
I don't know. I mean, I think for me, the only silver lining in the pandemic so far has been the time I have saved and actually been able to work where I'm not commuting to Boston. Okay. You know, that has, you know, given me back 2-3 hours a day when I'm not going in and out of the state house. But on the flip side, I cannot believe how fast each day goes by. I feel like from the second we're up in the morning until we sign off at night, I don't know about Dan, but I am constantly checking email, voicemails, tweets, Facebook messages, because people communicate with you in all forms. And so that sense of being completely responsive at all times, I think, is just almost overwhelming, you know, because people are in need and they're unsure of what's going on. And so when they're reaching out to you, you know, they're generally at a point of desperation. And so you want to do everything you can to help.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I think that's definitely true. There's a lot of phone calls, a lot of constituent service work that's definitely taken over some of the other work that we do. But I think one of the most interesting things, I think people ask me about, like, what's it like to be in elected office? And I'm always like, well, it's not really a job. It's a lifestyle. And that, you know, never, every day is never the same. But I think the pandemic showed a little bit about how much of a routine we actually do have. Yeah. Like when we came to the last week of April, that's every year we debate the budget that week. And I always have these set community meetings and neighborhood watches. So, you know, like tonight is usually the Upsala Street community meeting. We go, it's once a month, every month. So it's like, I almost realized how much of a routine I actually did have. And the same things that we kept going to and the same kind of movement every year. So now to have this kind of at home Zoom calls, phone calls, just kind of highlights how much it was structured.
Yeah. I think another difference too, honestly, is even before this, we spend a lot of our time learning about new things every day. There is so much that comes to us. We each come to the job with sort of our background and experiences, but we're responsible for sort of understanding all that's before the legislature. And so you're constantly needing to learn. And in this time, I find myself spending so much time reading, you know, lots of different material that's out there, being on different you know, Zoom calls and things where it's a learning opportunity for us, not just responding to something or talking about something, but we're trying to dig deeper into issues and understand them better so that we can be really good at our jobs. And so that constant need to educate yourself is also very prevalent right now.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, let's dig into some of the stuff that you guys do and that you're involved with. So we're, you know, I hear, and with Kathy can help me out with some of this too. So a food systems caucus, and it's, you know, I hear it floating around and I hear some of the talk, but can you give us some information about it? You know, what it is, what it does, you know, the origins of the committee membership, just kind of a little, you know, little insight.
Sure. So we, in 2015, when the local food plan for the Commonwealth was put into effect, it was finalized and published. One of the elements in that was a recommendation that the legislature have a food system caucus, sort of people focused on all issues relative to the food system. And that sort of languished for a few years. And one of the folks that Dan and I deal with almost daily, Wynton Pickoff, who heads the Mass Food Collaborative, had really pushed us to form the caucus. And so we came together in December 2018, I believe, right, Dan? Right,
yep.
December 2018. And we launched it with six co-chairs, three from the House and three from the Senate. So Dan and I and another colleague of ours, Paul Schmid, from Westport, were the three in the House, and then Senator Joe Comerford, Senator Eric Lesser, and Senator Ann Gobey from the Senate. And, you know, when we launched it, we all knew there would be, you know, some level of interest in this, but within the first 5 months, I think, we had become the second largest caucus at the State House. And now we have 132 out of the 200 members at the State House are part of the caucus. It's the second largest caucus, second only to the Democratic caucus. And as I joke all the time, I don't think we're going to overtake that one anytime soon. but, you know, it really, we had three priorities. We had food access and insecurity, farmland, and economic development. And every single legislature has one, if not more, of those issues in their district. And so it really appealed to people across a broad spectrum.
And I
so
think
go ahead. Sorry, Danny.
Well, I'll just say a lot of it was that broad spectrum thing was huge, because, you know, since I've been in office and Hannah's been in office, we've, you know, all of us have some worked in tandem on certain issues that somehow relate to the food system. You know, like, for example, our other co-chair, Paul Schmid, he actually is a farmer. He has a little deer cattle farm in Westport. And so he's done a lot of work around agricultural land use. And Hannah's worked on food donations and the Healthy Incentives Program. And so there's a lot of these, like, things that are going on. And the idea of a caucus is to kind of, you know, as we say, we're always trying to learn and trying to grasp with all the different issues that might be coming to you at the State House. So this helps us to kind of come together as a group and have the ability to go, like, all right, how does this all connect? How does this all, you know, affect each of our districts? And also, how can we learn more about the things we want to learn about? You know, kind of a give and take back and forth.
I think too,
how has the focus of the caucus changed given everything that's happened with the COVID-19 and the food supply chain? I mean, we were laughing earlier. You know, everyone talks about flour and meat and everything. We were saying, we can't find ice cream. You know, we have our priorities. They're ice cream.
Yeah, absolutely. You sound like my kids. That is the thing that tops the shopping list every week is ice cream.
But has it not changed? Has it just maybe during the COVID-19 pandemic, we've noticed that manufacturing and the need for manufacturing to stay in the United States has risen as a priority across the country, and especially in Massachusetts, given everything that's been going on with the PPE and the, you know, one of the virus tests is being created here. Have you noticed that type of difference within your caucus, or how has it been impacted by the pandemic?
Sure. So I would say it's a couple things. One of the impacts is so much of our food supply system was geared towards industrial uses, you know, large uses. So you think about the universities and colleges and the restaurant side of it. So Massachusetts seafood, you know, 70% of that was going right into restaurants and being used there. And so now that they don't have that way to sell into, you know, certainly it's coming back with doing some of the curbside, but it's not where it was. And so they are trying to rethink, you know, how do we market to consumers in a way that we haven't had to do before? We've relied on these other uses. Same thing with a lot of the farmers. A lot of their product was going right into, for instance, UMass system, you know, a big buyer for a lot of product in that part of the state out in the Amherst area. So there's been a big issue on the supply side in terms of having to retool. And if you think about like a dairy farmer who is supplying large volumes, you have all these eggs coming every day, but your cartons that you were delivering them in were for massive industrial, you know, size use, not for delivering to a grocery store. So there wasn't an egg shortage in the beginning. There was a shortage of, you know, being able to get the product into the right size to get it into grocery stores.
So it was more of a distribution channel issue than a supply issue.
Yeah, and most grocery stores, I've learned, only have about 48 hours worth of groceries there. You know, they're very good into this just-in-time delivery system, which normally would work okay. But all of a sudden, again, when, you know, the majority of people are now getting all of their food consumed right from a grocery store, no longer from a restaurant or coffee shop or any of the other ways that we would have in the past, it put a lot of pressure. And I think some of that is sorting out. But we've, you know, heard from a lot of folks, dairy farmers are another one, you know, who didn't have enough ways to store the milk that was being produced to then get it into different containers to get it to a grocery store or a bodega instead of, you know, the usual use that might have been high capacity into a university.
Yeah, and even here in Worcester, I just yesterday, we have the Worcester Food Hub, which is a partnership with the Health Foundation of Central Mass and the Chamber of Commerce, which is, you know, an incubator to kind of grow local food producers. So they've spurred off dozens of businesses, and they have a commercial kitchen that they allow people to connect with. You know, everything from someone who makes granola or kettle corn to ice cream to all these different local businesses that they're incubating. And, you know, they've had issues where, like, they were wholesaling and they didn't have a place to put it. So they've actually started direct sales where once a week they'll actually do a direct sale to a consumer instead of their wholesale or their to restaurants that they were doing beforehand. And it's been wildly successful. They didn't expect the turnout that they would have to show up. And it's a great way to get local food. So I got a nice pickup of shipment yesterday.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think that's probably one of the thing, like, so I know a lot of people are wondering if there's been a shift or more emphasis that's being placed on local, you know, food grown and produced locally. And then, you know, are we going to be increasing the production and the access to it? Like in that case where you're saying, Dan, about, you know, being able to get it. So, I mean, do you see that happening? Do you think that's going to be more of what we're going to be going through, you know? Is there going to be maybe a time limit on it? Like, what are, you know, obviously we can't predict. We don't have a crystal ball to look into to know when this is going to come to an end. But, you know, is that possible?
I think it's very, very possible. I think it's already shifting that way a little bit even beforehand. I think when we were first putting the caucus together or even working on legislation related to like food security and things, I was always amazing talking to other Gateway City reps. So people who are in Springfield or Lawrence, Lowell, New Bedford. So even the urban reps that you would think, well, what do we care about agriculture? And you've seen this growth of even urban agriculture. In Worcester, we have the REC, Regional Environmental Council, that they have acres of land under tillage right here in the city of Worcester, downtown, where they are employing, and they're also trying to get into processing. As another kind of incubator process plant right in the city too. So there's already some of that movement. So even when we put the caucus together, it wasn't just, you know, this isn't just a seafood caucus or just a dairy caucus, or, you know, it's not a suburban, rural or urban thing. It's actually everything is so intertwined right now. I think that there's, you know, like we've been joking, like food is kind of cool right now. It's like, it's kind of the hip thing right now to kind of talk about locally sourced food. Every restaurant you go to that opens now is not, you know, about some, you know, French cuisine. It's about like, well, no, this potato came from, you know, next door. And, you know, this chicken was raised in this way nearby. And it, you know, it ties into some of the environmental friendly movements, but also just some of the economic justice aspects of it as well.
And there's also, I would say, you know, unfortunately we have seen a growing number of people who are now food insecure. You know, we had a significant percentage of our population who was pre-COVID-19, you know, food insecure and relying on things like SNAP, as well as, you know, food pantries. And that number has grown. And I heard yesterday that 30% of the people now who are applying for SNAP have never, ever applied before. So they're brand new, you know, into the food safety net system. And so, you know, one of the things the governor had convened a food security task force. And one of the things that we talked about on there was making sure that as we were looking to tackle the hunger issues that were growing because of the pandemic, that we also supported our local agriculture in our marine commercial fisheries, so that we weren't just relying on food from coming outside of Massachusetts, but we thought about how do we make sure that we're feeding people and we're helping our economy. We're helping make sure that people here have jobs and are able to support an industry, which is very critical. I think 1 in 10 jobs in Massachusetts is in the food system. So whether that's the restaurants or growers or producers, and, you know, we want to make sure that that element of our economy is supported.
The legislation, Hannah, Dan mentioned yesterday that you just had some legislation that got passed or was for the bill.
So we had a bond bill yesterday that the House voted on. And in that was $36 million for a food resiliency fund. And that came out of the work of the Food Security Task Force, again, highlighting what are some of the things that we can do to support the whole food system out there. And it looks to structure as grants, and it's really looking across the spectrum and from the food bank side of things to the producer side of things. You know, what is needed out there? And again, it's very different depending on what part of the food system you're in, but the goal is to create enough different ways to support them. So it could be that we have grants that are small dollar grants. You know, there might be a farm out there who needs assistance with PPE that they need to make sure that they have that for their farmers market that they're selling at. There could be folks on the fishery side that need to think how to retool their selling. You know, maybe now they want to do a lot more direct to consumers, but they don't have sort of the infrastructure set up to do that. And so this fund could support that. So we want to make it as flexible enough that it can be responsive to the needs of the entire food system.
And Hannah, is that the recommendations public of the task force?
So the first set that were actionable that we put out there, I think have been publicized. The rest of it hasn't been put out there in the public yet, but it really focuses around both what are the immediate needs that we have to help the food system, and in particular people who are insecure, not able to get enough food. So for instance, Chelsea has been a real hotspot in terms of the number of COVID-19 cases, and that was a bit of a case study for us in what was needed to be able to really move into a community and quickly get food to people. That's a very densely populated area, and you know, how do you get food to people in that situation, which looks very different than if you have a rural hotspot, and how do you make sure that you get food to people on that? So there's sort of this idea around the immediate side of what we need to do. Then there's also looking at maximizing enrollment in our federal programs like SNAP. Those are federal dollars that support those programs. And so we were looking at, you know, if somebody approaches the Commonwealth to the unemployment system because they want to apply for that, how do we make sure we also tell them when they're applying for unemployment that they may be eligible for SNAP, or if they're coming through the MassHealth system? And so some of that is sort of that cross-pollinization and making people aware. And then the third sort of bucket of recommendations were around the supply side, the producers. What do we need to do to support them in this time?
So, Danny, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, food is cool now. That's kind of how we feel about manufacturing.
Back to the future, isn't it?
It is. It's a horrific time, but it's couldn't have been a better PR piece for manufacturing.
Right.
So I think the correlation between the two, because the food industry is actually considered manufacturing. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of clients that are in the food industry. What would you consider some of the successes within the caucus that have helped, like your food distribution companies, like Golden Cannoli is one, Gordon's Seafood when it was up on the shore there, they were a client a few years ago. What would you consider some of the bill successes or some of the legislative successes of the caucus?
Yeah, we've had a fair number so far. I mean, it's still such a young caucus, but with so many members. And I mean, I have to hand it to Hannah. She, you can't walk down the hallways of the State House and not be a member of the Food Caucus until you're cornered and forced to be committed to joining. And it's just been great to see so many people like absolutely flock to us. And Hannah's really been good about kind of keeping everybody, you know, educated and followed up on, so that when legislation does come up, we have a pretty solid group of people that are willing to kind of step forward. And I mean, just this year, one of the big ones was we did the Breakfast After the Bell legislation. It's probably the biggest piece of legislation that we moved, which helps to expand school meals through the rest of the Commonwealth, which has been a huge source of, you know, of distribution for local food. I know, like, particularly here in the city of Worcester, the lunches that they provide are made with local food and apple slices and all that stuff. So that's been a huge customer for a lot of distribution stuff. And the other one that we've probably been talking about, I don't know, me and Hannah have been talking about this for years now, but is the Healthy Incentives Program, which is HIP, which is a program that was initially a pilot program through some federal dollars that matches. So if you are a SNAP recipient and you use your SNAP benefits at a local farmer's market for locally fresh produce and food, that you actually get a dollar match on top. So it's an extra dollar for every dollar you spend, which is, you know, particularly for people who are food insecure, when you're on SNAP, you're counting every dollar, and that's a significant benefit, you know, doubling almost just your SNAP benefits. And that, I think, has been huge too. We hear from all from farmers and distributors about that, you know, with the growth of farmers markets and the HIP is really helps to incentivize. So they're growing more, producing more, because they basically have opened up into a new market. And I know, like, I go up to the senior center and on Vernon Hill here, and you'll see when they have their farmers market, I think it's Thursday afternoons, it's packed, and it's not your traditional, you know, say, you know, younger urban resident that's going down to the coolness factor of it. It's people going up there to get some, you know, locally produced food, and it's been very, very successful, and in some regards almost too successful, because we have to continuously work with the administration and with the House to ensure that it's continued to be funded and that it continues to kind of bring that benefit to both people who are food insecure, but also to the agriculture and distribution side of things, which has been a huge, huge success for them.
And I think too, you know, to Dan's point, both the food caucus that we formed was the first in the nation, and the Healthy Incentives Program is also something that which is entirely unique in the United States. There isn't another state that is doing it like we're doing. It started, it rolled out in April of 2017. It was going to be like a 3-year pilot for $1.2 million. And that $1.2 million was used up within, I think, three months or 4 months of the, and so then, you know, seeing the value of this program and the health benefit, you know, we went to bat to try and get state funding. And that's one of the things that's really, you know, Dan and I teamed up early on for that piece of it and really advocated for that in the House, the funding for it. And that really was sort of the precursor too, I think, to the foundation of the Food System Caucus. The last two budget cycles, we had the highest number of colleagues co-sponsoring our budget amendment, higher than any other budget amendment. And that was for the Healthy Incentives Program. And I think we had like 130 some out of 160 members who were, you know, a co-sponsor of that. And again, you know, it really speaks to people understanding not only the support of people who are food insecure and the ability to get fresh, healthy food, which is hard to spend, you know, it can cost more to get fresh, healthy food. So that's, but it also supports local agriculture. And that really, you know, helped two populations. We like to say it's sort of a 2-for-1, you know, for every dollar we're spending, it's helping two sometimes vulnerable populations, because our farmers, quite frankly, can also sometimes be food insecure. And so, you know, that the Healthy Incentives Program, I think, really laid the foundation for people to understand that the necessity of all parts of the food system in the Commonwealth and want to support it. I think to your question, Kathy, about manufacturing, one of the things that really stuck out to me was a couple weeks ago, there was a call with MassBio sort of about the PPE and how they'd sort of been working to help get more PPE here. And one of the findings that they had in looking at that was, you know, in the past, so many of the component parts were from other places around the world or around the nation. And Massachusetts was more assembling things in some cases. But I think people have become much more aware of the importance of also controlling the entire chain and wanting it produced here. And so I think, you know, in some ways, I think in the food system, that is just something that's really easy for people to understand too. You know, this notion of wanting to buy local, it was grown here, I'm going to buy it here, I'm going to consume it here, and I'm supporting the people who produced this, which also makes people feel really good.
Yeah. No, I agree. We're seeing a trend. We have a client actually, and this was before the pandemic, but they moved here to Massachusetts because the supply chain was within an hour drive. And we saw it after 9/11, when, you know, the air transportation basically shut down. Yeah. And we're seeing it rise again. And it had kind of changed a little bit. But we're seeing all of the companies that are pivoting and switching over to something related to PPE, whether, you know, it's masks or ventilator parts or something like that. And I think you're right. I think we're going to see the same thing with the food purchasing as well. You talk to my friends and they say, you know, oh, I can't find beef at the store, but I can go to the butcher and get it,
yeah.
You know, and he's yeah. purchasing locally.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, well, where can I find this? You know, in Worcester, it's Emerald Meats, you know, we go there, or Fairway Beef or something, you know, they have the supply. So I think the reliability on the local component for both manufacturing and food, I think is going to, you're going to see the trend in the future.
Yeah. So, you know, you guys, the successes are pretty awesome. Are there some priority bills that you guys are working on currently that, you know, you think are important to kind of highlight and maybe give us an insight as to moving forward, you know? And obviously right now, everybody, after what was just released from the governor this week and everybody starting to kind of get back, you guys obviously didn't stop. You're essential. You keep going. But are there things that moving forward that you're prioritizing, bills that are important, you know, as we move along in the next couple of weeks, months, and into the next year?
Yeah, we sent the caucus co-chairs in mid-April sent a letter to the Speaker and the Senate President highlighting bills that we thought were not only important, but were impactful to the COVID-19 crisis and could be helpful. And, you know, some of them just happened to also be caucus priorities. We had established our caucus priorities last year at the beginning of the session, and we did it by consensus from caucus members. So anyone could sort of submit, hey, here's what I think should be a priority of the caucus. And we made sure that we had a priority in each of our areas, at least one bill. So in food access and security, farmland and economic development. So in food access and insecurity, the bill that Dan had mentioned before, the breakfast after the bell, was one of our priorities. And that's right now in the final stages of having a few differences worked out between the House and the Senate, but we're very hopeful that will move and get signed into law. There's also one around food donations that right now the civil liability protection only is covers nonprofits. It doesn't cover like restaurants or individuals donating food. And so we've had this bill, again, this was filed in multiple sessions, but the other piece of that bill would also give farmers a tax deduction for donating crops. So sometimes farmers have excess crops that they've grown, but they're not going to harvest them because they know that they're not going to be able to sell them. You know, it's above and beyond what they can sell. And so we have this as part of this bill, it would give a tax credit to farmers. So they know then, okay, I can go pay, you know, to have these crops harvested because I'm going to be able to take a tax deduction and I can donate these perfectly good things that I've grown. And, you know, that way I'm helping people who don't have enough to eat. We also, Dan, I don't know if you want to talk about the healthy soils and agricultural bills and the farm protection and viability.
Yeah, so we have a couple around looking mostly at the farmland, which was from Representative Smish in particular, which is looking at, you know, it's an issue that affects both the environment, but also agriculture itself, looking at kind of healthy soils and how to kind of incentivize people to kind of keep their keep healthy soil practices going in the way that they keep care of their farms and everything else like that. And then also looking at a statewide, farmland action plan. And I was listening to the governor today, actually. He was talking about the reopening the economy and just talking about how Massachusetts is so different from other states and the fact that we have such great density, that we're not like other parts of the country, let alone, he was using just even New York as an example, that he has a metropolitan center for New York, but then it's a very large rural area. But Massachusetts is mostly very, very dense. And so how do we kind of look at keeping land as agriculture and making sure that we ensure that we can, it can be utilized and it can be, and can be continued to be taken and not, taken off the market, for so to say.
We really focus as a caucus, as you know, September is Hunger Month, where we shine a light really on the number of people who are food insecure. And so as a caucus, we've talked about, how do we really pull a bunch of bills together and give a focus to this issue and also highlight legislation that can be impactful and we should really advance as a legislature and get signed into law. So a lot of the work that we're doing right now in the pandemic is also things that we've already been thinking of. How do we position them to help folks understand that there's a lot more that we can do to both help folks who don't have access to enough food as well as our local producers?
And then the next biggest thing is usually the biggest thing that we do every year, which is the state budget itself. Which is, as we usually debate, we're in the middle of the debate usually right now. The House passes it the last week of April, the Senate in the mid-May, and then we conference it for the July 1st deadline. So, due to the inability for us to meet, directly in the difficult task of the budget, which is usually sometimes 1,700 amendments and 4 or 5 days of debate, we're trying to find a way to kind of effectively do that. So that's always, there's all the funding dollars. So many of the programs that we love to get going, require some funding as well. So that comes through in the budget itself.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of where Dan and I sit as legislators, a lot of people are looking towards the reopening now and sort of how do we get moved to. For some of the work that we do, the most intensive period is going to start to come of how do we deal with the tax loss and how do we balance the different priorities out there. So again, we're going to have a lot of work to do as a caucus together on determining what are the things that we think are really important for us to highlight for investment that are going to support the three caucus priorities that we have. And again, as Dan said, this is going to be a budget unlike, I think, probably anyone has seen in our time. 2008, 2009 recession is the closest thing, but I think what we're going to see is going to eclipse what happened then in terms of the economic impact and the recovery. So we have a lot of work ahead of us to do to support the people who are still going to be in need. Our economy is not going to bounce back. There are going to be people who have lost their jobs permanently and have to figure out, what am I going to do now? There are small business owners who are struggling immensely to hold on to their business. And there are investments we're going to need to make continuously in the pandemic side of things to make sure we're prepared if there is another flare in the fall or at another period of time. So, we're not out of the woods by any stretch in terms of the pandemic itself, let alone the outcome from it.
I'm sure the speaker did his annual speech for the Boston Chamber today. He did it virtually. And that's what he talked about, the budget and the deficit from the tax. From moving the tax date up and then just the general businesses from the economy shutting down and what's everything's going to happen with the budget. So how can MassMEP help you as you guys move forward as a caucus?
Well, we're always looking for more advocates to be involved with us. I think one of the best thing about the Food Systems Caucus is one of the ways we have stressed it is it's a way to, for all of us, I think we were saying earlier, to kind of get together to actually talk. So if there's, we have a very captive audience and we do everything from briefings with members, we've done tours, we've done trips to different things. And the idea is to kind of, first step in all this work is education and knowledge. And then also, if there are issues that come up, if there are the things that we need to be aware of or that the membership should be aware of that comes across your plate before we know. Sharing that information and helping us then advocate for it is probably the biggest way you could help us.
So we have a newsletter that goes out to about 10,000 people with a pretty significant open rate. So if you guys have any, you know, articles or press or legislation awareness that you want to get out, just let us know, because we can definitely put it out to our social media and our pieces there. So
I think that's great. And I think, again, you know, people are so much more aware right now of all of the different systems that are out there, whether it's the government system and needing to tap into the safety net that we have there, whether it's the manufacturing side in terms of where things are coming from and the challenges there. And in particular, you know, for us on the food side, really not only their own wondering where their food is going to come from, you know, where are they going to be impacted by, but also a sense of how do I support people around me who are producing food, and this awareness sort of that we're all in it together. And so, you know, we're fortunate to have a strong membership in the caucus who also feels really compelled to both help people who are needing more food and access to healthy food, but also the growers and producers and the fisheries, whether it's shellfish or finfish, you know, because we are a small state, I think we feel things more intensely of what's going on around us than perhaps, you know, large states where you can be much more further away from something. So even though I'm central Massachusetts, what's going on the coast for our seafood fishermen is something that I really care about and understand the impact, and vice versa.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Hannah. I've been fortunate enough. I've lived in a couple of different states, and I really didn't. You saying that really hits home, and it's so true. Like living in other states, I've lived in some other states that have been bigger, but coming here, you really do feel that impact all the way across. Like obviously, I'm same based in you know central Mass, but it is, it's very unique in how connected it really is. Like it surprises me every day. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I get to have the exposure of that because of being with Mass MEP. So it is really a unique thing. I have never really seen it in any of the other states I've lived in. So, it's something to really be proud of, that the state has to offer, in Massachusetts and everything that stands behind it. And, you know, we've spoken to different manufacturers, and to hear the manufacturers say that, you know, I asked them, what is the one thing that you've noticed the most? And they'll say that for their employees, they're so proud that if they're an essential employee, that they're still there and that they're still producing something from Massachusetts that's helping a much bigger cause than they probably ever would have thought.
Yep.
You know, before it's like, I go to work and I produce this part and it does this, but now it's so much bigger than that. And just the waves that it makes. So it's, I would be proud of that. I would be, you know, really be proud of that being from Massachusetts. That's something to wear on your sleeve. That's a good point.
I think we also, you know, work that way as legislators. So, you know, because of our small size as a state and proximity, you understand everyone else's districts as well. Like, you know, I understand, even though Dan and I probably live 3 miles apart, if that, 2 miles apart, he's an urban legislator, I'm a suburban legislator. And yet, like, we understand each other's districts, you know, really well. And so as a caucus, we're always looking to support each other. So we don't sort of come into the caucus like I represent this area and I, you know, somebody else represents that area. We're really trying to figure out how can we collectively advocate for the things that matter to the Commonwealth and the people who live here. So I think that's why too, we've been able to grow quickly and to maintain our membership and have them interested as advocates, because everyone sort of feels responsible for the all of it here.
Yeah.
So if you ever need us to connect you with food manufacturers, when I was on the website doing the research for the podcast, I noticed that Senator Lesser is the co-chair on the Senate side.
Yep,
he's also the co-chair for the manufacturing caucus too. So the joint partnership is right there already.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
So So is there anything else that you guys can think of that's you want to hit home, or you feel good that you kind of, we got everything that?
I think something that Dan said earlier is really worth highlighting, which is the role of advocates outside of the State House with our caucus. We've been really, we rely on the advocacy organizations and the folks out there who are really, you know, day in and day out working in the food system. We've been really deliberate about that we're trying to glean as much information we can. And, you know, to my comment earlier about having to educate ourselves all the time, like a lot of what we do is help educate caucus members on what the issues are out there. And so, you know, we think that the advocates are critical to our success at the State House, just as they think, you know, having legislators who are informed about these issues are critical, you know, to helping on the things that they care about. So that's really a key part of the way that we've structured the caucus too. And so I really am so grateful for the people who help educate us day in and day out and make us able to have the conversations that we can have inside the State House and be effective advocates there.
All right. Anybody else? Anybody? We all? Yeah. Everybody. I think everybody's good. Wow. That was a good one. So thank you guys again. I really, you know, we really appreciate it. You know, this is awesome. Great information, great intel to get out there. So thanks for joining us on the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast. So we had our guests today were Representative Hannah Kane, 11th of Worcester, and Representative Daniel Donahue. Thanks, guys, for joining us. And thanks, Kathy, for being our guest co-host today. You'll definitely be back as a co-host again.
Happy to anytime. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. But,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to Mass MEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. To listen to more of Mass MEP's podcasts or for more information on how Mass MEP, your resource for manufacturing greatness, can help you, please visit massmep.org.